Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. We have a great program for you tonight as Frank Gaffney, the president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., is with us on the phone. He will be speaking at our annual Spring Freedom Banquet that will be later this month on the 25th. That's Thursday night, 7 p.m. at the Akron Fairlawn Hilton. And you can register for the banquet at our website at ohioca.org. And, of course, this year we're focusing on the D-Day Landing Prayer Act, legislation that will add FDR's prayer at the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. We've basically are now on to the fundraising and construction phase of the project as it passed and was signed by President Obama back in June of 2014. And now we're working with the U.S. Park Service for its construction and placement at the memorial, a lasting tribute to our veterans who have served us so nobly. And it's for really all veterans, although it is the D-Day prayer, the prayer that President Roosevelt prayed with the nation on the morning of the D-Day landings. Well, with us on the phone is Frank Gaffney. Again, he is the president of the Center for Security Policy. He has been an advisor in Washington on security issues, and of course, his own group weighs in on many national security interests, and we're going to talk about a few items tonight. But Frank, let's get right to the big news of the week in Washington is President Trump basically wants a change when it comes to the directorship of the FBI. Let's talk about that. Your thoughts.
I think this is a welcome and long overdue development, Chris. The president, I think, has ample cause for believing that the FBI needs new management after the really horrible thrashing that it's been going through over the past year, especially as a result of Jim Comey's interjection of his agency, of its investigation of Hillary Clinton, and his serial public statements about that investigation and the quality of the material that it had developed and his judgment that it couldn't be prosecuted and then maybe it could be, depending on further evidence, and then no, it wasn't. And it really has spoken of a, I think, well, a failure of leadership on the one hand, and a departure from the traditions and the required practices of the FBI that has been deeply upsetting. But I have a whole nother set of reasons that I think this kind of change is, again, both welcome and overdue, that have to do with a particular concern of mine, which is that the FBI, in addition to, you know, rooting out corruption and malfeasance on the part of public officials and that sort of thing, has as really its central mission protecting the American people from internal threats.
Yes.
And I think at the top of that list of internal threats operating in this country today is what I call Sharia supremacism and its adherents. And by that, I don't just mean the 100-plus cases that we're told the FBI has ongoing with respect to the Islamic State and its operatives inside every state in the union. That's bad enough. But I'm talking as well about another threat, another internal enemy that I believe the FBI under Jim Comey, and in fairness, under Barack Obama, and before that, under George W. Bush, a fatal mistake of believing that the Muslim Brotherhood, another Sharia supremacist operation with exactly the same goals as the Islamic State, could somehow be worked with, could be engaged, could be relied upon to be helpful in the counterterrorism mission of the Bureau and so on. That mistake and what it meant for what I consider to be disarming our first line of defense at the FBI, I think is a firing offense. And I'm grateful that President Trump finally has gotten around to doing just that. And I hope the replacement will be more sound and more capable of dealing with the enemies, foreign and domestic, as the oath of office requires.
Well, that's right. And of course, Mr. Comey has been no stranger to the news and controversy. Last year, of course, you look at the FBI as really a non-political post. The director is to basically execute that office and oversee the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And there are field agents and those who are lifelong and career FBI agents who dedicate themselves to really the law in our land. And they do some fine work. But the tone that came out of his office last year, again, was schizophrenic at times. I mean, the whole Hillary Clinton email scandal with the investigation and the server, and then what type of classified information was divulged through her private server, and then to find out that he not only is the he comes out makes statements, obviously, as he was called before Congress, but then he makes judgments, and it's not for him to judge. I mean, it's for the FBI basically to present evidence and let the prosecutors and the courts proceed from there, and of course any grand jury that might be convened. But that's not what he did. He absolutely politicized his office. He infuriated both sides of the aisle, both Democrats and Republicans. And so it's interesting now that this thing has become very politicized, as last night, this week, we've been hearing for Democrats basically saying this is very Nixonian. It reminds us of the Saturday Night Massacre. It's funny, Tom Brokaw was on with Rachel Maddow, a very far leftist on MSNBC, and she had one guest on that was talking about the Watergate scandal, and then Tom Brokaw, and he said, well, I have to disagree with your former guest. He said, this isn't anything like Watergate, and he was just stating the facts. He himself, obviously, is not somebody to the right, but to the left, but he was being basically honest and forthright that no, that's not what this is. And, of course, the director serves at the pleasure of the president. He has the discretion to change that office if he sees fit, but it's interesting that there were a number of Democrats, Chuck Schumer, the minority leader in the Senate, among them, who were calling for the firing of James Comey last year. And now, of course, are saying this is terrible. This is, an overreach and, all the kind of outrageous things and outlandish things they're saying. Obviously, the Democrats are hanging on to any kind of controversy they can. I take great umbrage constantly hearing about the Russia's meddling in our investigations. I said, I'll tell you what happened. We in middle America voted for Donald J. Trump. That's why he won by Ohio, the battleground state, by a large margin of 10% over his opponent. We voted. It wasn't a Russian. It was Chris Long, and it was many folks like us who voted for Donald Trump and wanted change. I mean, come on, get a grip already. Let's move on. You folks are going to have to, tool your message to a greater population of the Republic if you want to win offices. But it seems like they're hard after this whole conspiracy theory and the administration trying to bog them down. Anything to bog down the administration. And I hope that the president and his staff will not have any of it, but continue, as he said in his 100-day speech, basically, it's time for us to govern. And I think that that was a message to Congress, which is now controlled by the Republicans, to do just that. The health care bill signed. I was in Washington last week at the White House, the first observance of the National Day of Prayer, by the way, in 8 years. Mr. Obama didn't seem fit to extend an invitation to the National Day of Prayer Task Force. Mr. Trump did, and of course, he invited us to the Rose Garden, and there was Franklin Graham was there, and Graham Lotz, the Dobsons, a number of Christian leaders. Wonderful time to pray and intercede for our nation. And then, of course, he signed the executive order on religious liberty. So, again, our friends on the left aren't happy with the way things are going. We are happy with the way things are going and are praying for our president and the administration, but I agree with you. There's so much to be done in the FBI that has been basically not functioning in the role that it should. What's your thoughts? What do you see happening with a new director and going forward in the FBI?
Well, you said a lot of things that I agree with, Chris, and I just would emphasize in particular the point that there are lots of good men and women in the FBI who have never, I think, taken their eye off the ball in terms of preserving, the republic, as you put it, to assure that its enemies, foreign and domestic, are countered, and who have been clear-eyed about the nature of those enemies. What's been particularly worrying to me, though, and what speaks to your question, of course, will depend in part on who the new director is. But if that person, he or she, is going to allow those men and women who do the job day in and day out on the streets of America, in dangerous places here as well as abroad,
yes,
in cases, they can, I think, help get this sorted. And it will take, though, clarity about the nature of the enemy. You know, Donald Trump famously repeatedly called it radical Islamic terrorism. I think Sharia supremacism is actually a better way of depicting it, because it's not all terrorism. That Muslim Brotherhood bit, as you know, is pre-violent rather than violent, but it's no less dangerous in,
yes,
a society like ours, because it's aimed at, and explicitly so, destroying us from within. So my hope is that new director not only is going to take a fresh look at things like Hillary Clinton's emails and the investigation thereof and make a decision as to whether actually a prosecution should be recommended to the Justice Department. I certainly think it should be, but that's for that next director to decide. But in so many other respects, restoring the integrity and the morale of the Bureau is going to be job one for the new director, and I hope at least one of the things that will entail will be getting sorted out on this threat from the Sharia supremacists.
Well, that's right, and we do believe that the president did make the right move. A lot of people who have been weighing in on this have echoed that, and of course, you can't hear it for all the firestorm from the left. But again, that will die down.
But as you say, Chris, That's because the left is determined to destroy this president. Make no mistake about it. That's what this is ultimately all about. This notion that he has, in fact, been this evidence to support the fact that he was colluding with the Russians to steal the election. That's not true. But at every turn, they're going to seize upon whatever pretext they can to continue to try to breathe life into that corpse. And I think we've got to move on, as you say, but they and their pals in the mainstream media are not going to let them do it. So that makes so important the work that you're doing on this show. So thank you for having me on about it.
Well, thank you, Frank, and thank you for the great work you've done throughout the years on national security issues. And I do want to change topic a little bit and talk about North Korea, because it's been in the news as of late. And of course, we've got a very serious problem there. The administration realizes that. The previous administration really didn't take the threat very seriously. He had other interests. And so this threat was allowed to grow, which threatens the region, but also threatens the United States. What can you tell us about North Korea? What are our options in front of us? And how serious is the risk of North Korea actually being able to reach out and maybe launch a missile at the United States or more?
Unfortunately, Chris, there is in place today in North Korea the capability to reach out and attack parts of the United States. At a minimum, Hawaii, Guam, islands, the archipelago of Alaska, if not, its main part. And by some accounts, the west coast of the United States, and in short order, probably the entire United States, through just a ballistic missile that delivers a nuclear weapon over those long distances. What we know for sure is that the North Koreans have another option, however, and have now for a couple of years. And that is by being able to use orbiting satellites as a vehicle for attacking this country at will, basically. If they have, for example, a nuclear weapon aboard one of those satellites, they've got two up now that are orbiting, coming over the United States with regularity. If they were to detonate that nuclear weapon, it would create something called electromagnetic pulse, which we believe would create conditions that would destroy the electric grid of the United States. So long before they get a ballistic missile capable of reaching this country, they have that potential devastating threat And it is part of what I think the United States government is increasingly describing as a mortal danger for our country, for our people. Long before, you know, the rest of this stuff comes online, that's present. And interestingly enough, Chris, you might say, well, that seems unlikely. I would hope it is, but I'm not sure the evidence says that. But just two weekends ago, you may remember, there was a missile launch. Didn't go very far, and it blew up. And we were told initially that that was evidence of yet another failure in the North's ballistic missile program. In fact, on closer inspection, it looks as though what was done by the North Koreans was to loft a missile very high up into the exoatmosphere, about 71 kilometers, in fact, not to go long distance, but to put something up there and then to explode that something. Now, in this case, there was nothing on the front end of it. It just, they detonated the missile. But what that trajectory suggests, what the profile of that test suggests, is that they were actually seeking to demonstrate the ability to put one of these electromagnetic pulse weapons, in that case at a relatively low altitude, but sufficiently high to destroy South Korea's grid, and perhaps that of Japan, but not so wide the field so as to damage that of its friends in China. So in other words, I think there's reason to be really concerned that this threat from the North is growing and does need to be countered. If I may just tell you one quick anecdote, which I only learned this morning about, and that is that there's something that we could do right quick to protect Hawaii, which is currently not protected against these sorts of missile threats that can reach them already. And that is to put in place a missile defense. We actually have the launchers out there. We have a radar out there. We just haven't put the missiles in place. And one of the things I'm very, very keen on is seeing if, in response to this growing threat from the North, the commitment the president has made to deal with it, his pledge to build a state-of-the-art missile defense, that we begin right away by getting some of those missiles that we have in the inventory now in those launchers ashore, as they say, Aegis ashore is the term used for the program, and begin defending the people and our strategic assets in Hawaii.
Well, with us on the phone is Frank Gaffney, the president of the Center for Security Policy. We're discussing the North Korean issue, and you're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Frank will be a speaker at the upcoming Freedom Banquet on Thursday, May 25th at the Akron Fairlawn Hilton. If you'd like some more information, you can visit our website at the Ohio Christian Alliance. Just Google that, and you'll see the information pertaining to the dinner that night. We hope that you'll be able to join us. Frank, as we look at North Korea, and of course now so many of our service personnel have served there over the years, obviously the Korean War and then the demilitarized zone protecting South Korea. The South Koreans, of course, have they appreciate what this country has done for them to afford them the liberty. When you look at the oppression in communist North Korea, basically the terror that the people in North Korea live with every day, we can see that this dictator basically is a madman. And so it does make us all uncomfortable as to what's going forward. The previous administration actually was scaling down our military capabilities, taking nuclear weapon systems offline, defunding major areas of the military. Our current administration understands that. That's why the president in his budget was seeking to put more billions of dollars into the military infrastructure of this country. And as you said, that in Hawaii, there are some weapon systems that need to come online. Some of it has to do with funding and the availability of equipment. And I think the administration, when it got its national security briefing, was told just how bad things were from the Pentagon's perspective, given the 8 years of his predecessor. Your thoughts on that?
Well, the biggest concern at the moment is, while, again, what you said is very relevant and important to understand, just in the past 2 days, the people of South Korea have voted overwhelmingly for a leftist to become their president. He's now been installed, and his policy, very explicitly, is to return to the failed policy of the past. They call it the Sunshine Policy, by which the South Koreans tried desperately to endear themselves to the North Korean dictator and to provide him food and energy and investments and even technology to try to reduce tensions on the Korean Peninsula. And I'm sorry to say that all that did in practice was intensify the danger that not only the South Korean people face, but our own forces who are there to protect them, as well as our friends in Japan and assets and allies elsewhere. So this is a dangerous moment, I'm afraid. And the South Koreans are obviously desirous of not having a conflict, understandably so, because it would be devastating to them and their country. But I believe they've made a fatal mistake by entrusting their country, their security, to somebody who is simply very wrong-headed on this and misses a lot of the key underlying realities that you just described.
Well, that is disconcerting. I've been seeing some of the headlines that he's making overtures that he is not discounting a visit to the North. Obviously, what's going on over there? I mean, do they not know what they're dealing with? Or, as you say, they would rather offer appeasement. We know that that is a failed policy. 70 some years ago, it failed in Europe. Appeasement to Adolf Hitler did not result in peace, but in a world war that killed over 50 million people worldwide. How do they think that, not being students of history, that appeasement does not work when you're dealing with tyrants like Kim Jong-un?
Well, I think probably this is a function in part of how many of them have been educated. You know, until the recent, now deposed president, most of the past 20-odd years, I think it's fair to say, the South Korean government has been in the hands of leftists like this. So, and they pursued this same, as I say, sunshine policy. And as a result, a lot of the people who grew up in that country during that period, unlike the previous generation, which experienced firsthand the horrors of World War II and the Korean War, these are people who've grown up in the, I think, delusion that somehow if you just are nice to these guys north of the DMZ, that they will be nice to you and there will be no danger of an attack on Seoul or any other part of the country, that the danger will simply go away. It's not just wishful thinking. It's not just a perfectly understandable human preference for peace. It is, I think, a delusion. And it is putting them and our forces, as well as our national interests, at risk.
Well, thank you. You've been listening to Frank Gaffney, the Center for Security Policy. Frank, give us your website.
It's securefreedom.org.
And he will be our speaker at the upcoming Freedom Banquet. Frank, thank you. We look forward to having you later this month on the 25th. God bless you, my friend.
Thank you, Chris, as do I.
And again, that's Frank Gaffney, and he'll be giving a center. He'll be giving a security briefing at the banquet, and you can learn more at our website at ohioca.org. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow Americans, last night when I spoke with you about the fall of Rome, I knew at that moment that troops of the United States and our allies were crossing the channel in another and greater operation. It has come to pass with success thus far. And so, in this poignant hour, I ask you to join with me in prayer.
This is how FDR announced to the nation that the liberation of Europe was underway, with the D-Day landings in Normandy 73 years ago. The Ohio Christian Alliance Annual Freedom Banquet is Thursday, May 25th at 7 p.m. at the Akron Fairlawn Hilton. Proceeds will benefit the effort to add the D-Day prayer to the World War II Memorial in D.C. Speakers are historian Bill Fetter of the American Minute and Frank Gaffney from the Center for Security Policy. To register, log on to ohioca.org or phone 330-887-1922. That's 330-887-1922.
Okay, and with us on the phone is our good friend Bill Fetter of the American Minute, and he'll be at the Freedom Banquet on the 25th of this month. And you can register again at our website at ohioca.org or just phone 330-887-1922 for tickets. Bill, welcome to the program.
Chris, great to be with you.
Well, as you and I are both very excited about this historical presidential prayer becoming a reality, being added to the World War II Memorial, you, my friend, were very much instrumental in the inspiration of this through the Daily American Minute that you've been basically publicizing for years now of those who have been on your list every day in their inbox they get today in American history or in church history. And it's very fascinating the way that you put the historical facts together. And it just so happened, I think it was something like 9 years ago now, when I was reading the American Minute that day, and it happened to be FDR's prayer. And of course, as a kid, you've heard bits of this. Maybe in the old Anne Frank movie, there was a portion of the prayer and the audio of the president praying when they were all huddled around the radio in the hiding place. And of course, it was the way that the president announced the nation that the liberation of Europe was underway. And so they understood that the D-Day landings were beginning, and they were all very happy about that. But the prayer had basically been lost in time, but you brought it back by way of the American Minute, and then one day back in 2011, when woke up one morning, and of course we have some friends in Congress that were newly elected, and I told my wife, "Hey, I've got an idea. I'm going to ask Congressman Bill Johnson to offer legislation to add FDR's D-Day prayer in its entirety at the World War II Memorial." And one thing led to another. The congressman said, "I'd love to do that. It's fortuitous that you've asked me. I'm serving on some very key committees." And then, of course, later that year in 2012, it did pass the Congress, in other words, it passed the House by a vote of 386 to 26. Time ran out in the Senate, so it had to be reintroduced. And Senator Portman was our sponsor in the Senate. Congressman Johnson again reintroduced it in the House. And then, of course, Senator Portman called us with the news that it had passed by unanimous consent. Then, of course, it was concurred on by the House and then signed quietly by President Obama on June 30th of 2014. Well, now working with the U.S. Park Service, Friends of the World War II Memorial, and the Ohio Christian Alliance Ed Fund, we are working for its placement. All the design drafts have been approved by the Fine Arts Commission and the park system, and so we're a go for fundraising because it won't be paid for by tax dollars but by contributions of individuals. That's what the banquet is about coming up on the 25th, just before Memorial Day. If you'd like to join us, please do, because Bill Fetter will be there, and Frank Gaffney, who you just heard on the first part of the program, he'll give a national security briefing, because our people in the military are the ones who have to carry out the missions of defense, defending our republic when we enter into conflict around the world. And that's why we, as God's people, pray for the peace of this nation and pray for our leaders. Bill, you wrote a book, Prayers and Presidents, Inspiring Faith from the Leaders of the Past. And it's great because it's many of the prayers of the presidents. We had the joy and privilege of being with President Trump last Thursday at the National Day of Prayer in the Rose Garden. And it was the first observance in some years. Mr. Obama did not observe the National Day of Prayer during his watch, but Mr. Trump invited us all back. He was there with Franklin Graham, Ann Graham Lotz, the Dobsons, Tony Perkins, a number of religious leaders. leaders were there from across the country. And, of course, that was the same day that he signed the Religious Freedom Executive Order, which was a very nice first step, I think, to emphasize that his administration will protect the religious liberties of people of faith. Your thoughts?
Well, Chris, first of all, thank you for spending all that energy and effort to get the D-Day Prayer Act added to the World War II Memorial there in Washington, D.C. Millions of people every year go to that memorial. I've talked to many. I've been on airplanes with when they were taking veterans up to the memorial. My wife has been on airplanes where they've been on there. And we would hear reports that they went through the whole entire memorial and they did not see one reference to God. Now, I had an uncle that I never met that died in a B-17 flying from England across the English Channel over to Holland. And he was an Eagle Scout, right? Back then, it was
right.
Where you pledged to do my duty to God and my country. And he was a very moral person. My mom and grandparents missed him for years. They would say prayers. They thought maybe he was captured by the Germans.
And
my grandmother would write letters to the King of England, you know, King George the Fifth. And but I know that he died so that we could have the freedom to pray.
Yes.
He was a godly person. And so to think that they would have a World War II memorial and not one mention of God, and to me, it's heart-wrenching that here they fought Franklin Roosevelt, who was a Democrat,
yes.
Passed out Gideon's New Testaments and Book of Psalms to all the soldiers in World War II. I mean, here's just 70-some-odd years ago, a Democrat president passing out New Testaments to all of the military, brown ones to the Army, blue ones to the Navy. I have a brown one. It's all dog-eared. And you open up to the first page, it's got a dedication by President Franklin D. Roosevelt. He says, "As Commander-in-Chief, I take pleasure in recommending the reading of the Bible to all who serve in the armed forces of the United States. It's been a source of inspiration and so forth," signed Franklin D. Roosevelt. And so we need to remember that this effort to purge our country of its Judeo-Christian faith is a recent phenomenon. And I applaud you and the congressmen and senators that had the courage to actually get this through and pressure the past president to sign it so that we could have God acknowledged in the World War II memorial.
Well, that's right. It's a wonderful prayer. In fact, we're going to have up on our website the audio again in a video that a volunteer put together for us of some of the pictures of the D-Day landings and, of course, the 82nd Airborne as they dropped into Normandy. And the president, he hand-wrote this prayer, and it's 515 words. It's the way in which he announced the nation that the liberation of Europe was underway. It's all he did was he asked for the nation to pray with him, and you can hear the heart of a president who's deep into war and that his countrymen are dying on battlefields around the world. You know, as you said, Bill, that the memorial is a wonderful tribute to the 16 million Americans that served us in World War II. It was constructed and dedicated in 2004. In fact, a fellow Ohioan, Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur, actually was very instrumental in getting the bill through Congress that actually was for the erection of the World War II memorial, and it's a wonderful memorial. In fact, I'm told that it's the most visited memorial in Washington, maybe because you don't have to go through a security checkpoint. You could just walk around and see the different placards. But you're right, there's not a scripture verse, a reference to God, or a prayer anywhere on it. Well, that's what we wanted to rectify. And with this really God-inspired idea, God gave wind to it. And so I remember getting the call from Senator Portman, and he said, Chris, I'd like to introduce that bill for you in the Senate, after Congressman Johnson introduced it in the House. And so the Lord was with this thing. It's gotten great bipartisan support. In fact, the Fine Arts Commission, that were basically all President Obama appointees, were very supportive and actually looking over the designs to make sure that it gets the prominence that it deserves. The placement is going to be the Circle Remembrance just beyond the Atlantic Arch, a $600,000 enhancement to the area with marble stone that matches that of the memorial, and then four large bronze plaques with the entire prayer, with inch and a half size type. So it will be very legible and a wonderful addition to the memorial. And of course, they're very excited about it. I'm told even that the grandson of FDR, who serves on the Friends of the World War II committee, is thrilled. The family's thrilled. I didn't have any contact with former President FDR's family during this time, but we're glad that they're thrilled. But it really is for the people and for the veterans of all generations, because it speaks a tribute to those men and women who serve us in battlefields around the world. Now, also, they want to talk about maybe adding the names of the cemeteries of all the soldiers and sailors that did not come home, and adding the names of those cemeteries, both in the Pacific and the Atlantic, to what's called the Circle Remembrance around this prayer. I think that would be a nice addition. They're working on that. So it's going to be a very moving experience, and we hope that we can see this through. Of course, it won't be paid for by tax dollars, but by private contributions from individuals. In fact, even George Fowler, who is 93 years old and gave testimony 6 years ago, he called me just last month. He says, "Hey, how are we coming with that?" He said, "I want to stick around for this dedication." I said, "Well, George, you hang in there. If all goes well, it'll be June of 2018. So I hope he's around for its dedication. It's, George Poppy Fowler was a Navyman that flew off the aircraft carriers in the Pacific during the war. But thank you, Bill, and we hope to again almost a year from now, 13 months from now, hopefully it's dedication if all goes well.
Well, I believe it will, and again, I want to let the listeners know that this is a volunteer funding for this project, and that they can be a part of it by visiting the website that you have. When did you get that address again?
That's the Ohio Christian Alliance website, and the contribution is tax deductible, given to the OCA Ed Fund or Ohio Christian Alliance Ed Fund. In fact, you'll see as you go to the contribution link that it says prayer project, just click on that link, make your contribution. It's fully tax deductible, and every dollar will help us as we are raising the money. Now, from our standpoint, we're trying to raise at least $300,000 of the $600,000 needed. The Friends of the World War II Memorial are going through their contacts to do the same, and that will pay for its construction. So these monies will go for that purpose. And so when you visit Washington, you see this prayer, you said, "Hey, I contributed to that and helped it get placed." And that's how it gets done. You know, a lot of the memorials and monuments in Washington were not paid for by tax dollars. In fact, the George Washington Memorial itself was private contributions. It took a number of years. In fact, if you look halfway up, you can see the difference in the granite stone, but where the construction paused at a certain point before they continued. The Smithsonian Institute, the castle there, was privately donated, and so on. In fact, the World War II Memorial itself was private donations, $172 million from veterans all across the country. In fact, Bob Dole gave $16 million of his own money that he was able to raise for the memorial. So that's how it gets done in Washington, folks. It's not tax dollars. Don't count on that. It's our contributions, and we want you to participate and take some ownership of this. It'd be a great pride for you and your children and those who have served in our armed forces in your family as well. Well, Bill, let's talk about prayers and presidents. This is part of our legacy from the beginning of our start as a nation, with Reverend Duché's prayer before Congress and every state legislature and before Congress. That prayer continues, and we need to keep the home fires burning of God's people praying.
Well, you know, during the colonial time, many states had annual days of fasting and prayer, usually on Good Friday, like the state of New Hampshire. Matter of fact, they were voting on whether or not to ratify the U.S. Constitution because it needed 9 states and there were only 8. And New Hampshire was in a deadlock, so the governor of New Hampshire, John Langdon, postpones the ratifying convention, and they have a day of fasting and prayer. They get back together. They hear a sermon from the Harvard president on the Republic of the Israelites, an example to the American states. They vote and to ratify. They're the 9th state. The U.S. Constitution goes into effect.
Oh my.
After New Hampshire had a day of fasting. This is part of our heritage. Woodrow Wilson had a day of fasting and prayer when we entered World War I. John Adams had a day of fasting and prayer in 1798 during a threatened war with France. James Madison had a day of fasting and prayer after the British burnt the White House. It's like, okay, God, you got our attention, burning the White House here. Zachary Taylor had a day of fasting and prayer in 1849 when there was a cholera epidemic and 150,000 Americans died of cholera. Matter of fact, Ohio had to postpone its first state fair because of cholera. 8,000 died in Cincinnati and the different cities in Ohio. The mayor of Dayton, Ohio, closed all the stores, and everyone knelt openly in the street and prayed. And that was 1849, and the president, Zachary Taylor, had a day of fasting and prayer. And then the death rates drop off. What a answer to prayer there. And we go through, before the Civil War, President James Buchanan had a day of fasting and prayer. Twice during the Civil War, Lincoln had a day of fasting and prayer. And then, of course, he made the Day of Thanksgiving an annual event. And we could go all the way up through the 1800s. And it was Truman that made the National Day of Prayer an annual event. And then, of course, it was Ronald Reagan that made it the first Thursday in May. But this is our heritage. And it's been a very recent attempt to erase it. There's actually a communist tactic called deconstruction, where you separate a people from their past, get them into a neutral where they do not remember where they came from, and then you can brainwash them into the future you have planned for them. Sort of a sales technique. If I was a toothpaste salesman, the first thing I would do is say negative things about the toothpaste you're currently using. You're still using that old stuff. It'll eat the enamel off your teeth. Ooh, you're repulsed by it. Now I got you into the neutral. You're sort of open-minded. What are all the toothpastes out there nowadays? And then I can give you my pitch for this tartar control breath freshener stuff. And so they go into the classrooms and they tell kids negative things about the founders of the country. Oh, they owned slaves, took land from slave owners and so forth, took land from Indians. And then the kids are repulsed by them. And then the kids get into a neutral and they're sort of open-minded. And then you can give them your pitch for LGBT or Islam or whatever other agenda you have. And so we see this has been applied culturally. And we're well into this, where we've gone through a generation now where we've not taught this history, and we have an uneducated populace, and now we're being brought into a secular and even Islamic worldview, and with all the loss of freedoms that entails.
Well, that's very frightening, and we just had Frank Gaffney on. Of course, he's doing a lot of work on the Islamist basically intervention into our government and over the last number of years through the Muslim Brotherhood in all levels of government. And during President Obama's administration, they were in the Pentagon, they were in the CIA, they were in Homeland Security. And these were dubious individuals that were in every facet of government. And the new administration is putting their people in place, but they're being fought with every day, and that's why we need to continue to pray, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, we're in a spiritual warfare, our country. We've got a president that is giving deference to evangelicals, to Christian leaders, and basically those who have been persecuted over the last number of years. The Little Sisters of the Poor were featured last Thursday at the White House. The president said it should not be happening in our country, but it did, against their statement of faith that government policies was forcing them to basically do that, which is against their statement of faith. And like you said, Bill, our young people, they're being brainwashed into the schools and basically eradicating their foundation of who we are as an American Republic, and to replace it with Islamist sympathies and, of course, LGBT, philosophy of life and gender neutral, this kind of thing. And only one has to guess as to where we're going as a nation if we continue this moral drift. That's why, folks, we need to be praying. We need to be interceding for our country. A call to prayer has gone out. I was reading in Ezekiel when God says, when I set the watchman on the wall and he gives warning, if the people take warning. But if they don't take warning, it's not the watchman's fault. It's, then the people lose their liberty and their life, not because the watchman did didn't alarm. But if the watchman doesn't send the alarm, then you know the watchman is accountable. Well, we're on the watch, as it were. And what better way than to pray and intercede? That's why we were in Washington last week, for first and foremost to pray for our leaders and to intercede. I had the opportunity to pray and actually read the Bible on Capitol Hill. But I got to say, Bill, there was only a very few people that were participating. And there was maybe a church that came out on the National Day of Prayer. They had about 500 in attendance. Wonderful people. Sometimes it doesn't take a lot, does it? But it takes intent prayer, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And, you know, I want to remind the listeners of Franklin Roosevelt. I actually wrote a book of all of his quotes. He said, "The whole world is divided between pagan brutality and the Christian ideal. We choose human freedom, which is the Christian ideal." Franklin Roosevelt said again, churches and government can work hand in hand. Government can ask the churches to stretch the social justice, while at the same time, government guarantees to churches, Gentile and Jewish, the right to worship God in their own way. State and church are rightly united in a common aim. That's an interesting quote there. Here's Franklin Roosevelt, 1942. "The world is too small for both Hitler and God. Nazis have announced their plan of enforcing their pagan religion all over the world, by which the Bible and the Cross of Mercy would be displaced by Mein Kampf and the swastika." Another quote from Franklin Roosevelt, 1940. "Those forces hate democracy and Christianity. They oppose democracy because it is Christian. They oppose Christianity because it preaches democracy." That's something you wouldn't hear too often today. Then he went to Yalta, and after the conference, Roosevelt said, "I saw Sevastopol and Yalta, and I know there is not room enough on earth for both German militarism and Christian decency."
Mm.
And then this, he says, "I hope you've reread the Constitution. Like the Bible, it ought to be read again and again." So here you have a Democrat president, Franklin Roosevelt, saying, read your Bible again and again. And then in 1942, Roosevelt says, "This great war effort shall not be imperiled by a handful of noisy traitors, betrayers of America, betrayers of Christianity itself." And then he goes on to say, "Your government is working with representatives of Catholic, Protestant, and Jewish faiths. Without these three, all three of them, things would not be as easy." Notice it's just Catholic, Protestant, and Jewish. It doesn't have Islam in there. These are all quotes from Franklin Roosevelt from the book that I put together called The Faith of FDR. And it's important for us to remember this heritage, not just in print, which I have done, but also in stone, which you have done and are working on.
Yes.
And the listeners can have a part in having it be remembered in stone. And so by donating to your website, give that site again.
That's the Ohio Christian Alliance website, and you'll be giving a tax-deductible contribution to the OCA Ed Fund, and then just click on Prayer Project when you get to the link, and then that contribution will go for the construction and the placement of the prayer at the World War II Memorial. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Bill Fetter from the American Minute. Don't go away.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow Americans, last night when I spoke with you about the fall of Rome, I knew at that moment that troops of the United States and our allies were crossing the channel in another and greater operation. It has come to pass with success thus far. And so, in this poignant hour, I ask you to join with me in prayer.
This is how FDR announced to the nation that the liberation of Europe was underway with the D-Day landings in Normandy 73 years ago. The Ohio Christian Alliance Annual Freedom Banquet is Thursday, May 25th at 7 p.m. at the Akron Fairlawn Hilton. Proceeds will benefit the effort to add the D-Day prayer to the World War II Memorial in D.C. Speakers are historian Bill Fetter of the American Minute and Frank Gaffney from the Center for Security Policy. To register, log on to ohioca.org or phone 330-887-1922. That's 330-887-1922.
And we're back with Bill Fetter of the American Minute. And, of course, we're talking about his book, Prayers and Presidents. And Bill will be speaking at the Freedom Banquet, and he'll have many of his books. In fact, he'd like to autograph them for you. And, you know, these are real treasures, folks. He has written many books over the years, What Every American Needs to Know About the Koran, Prayers and Presidents, American God and Country, an Encyclopedia of Quotations, so many more that Bill has written over the years, and ones in which you can give gifts also to your children and help them. Bill, give us the website where people can go and get the American Minute every day, and also look at some of your research and books to purchase.
Well, thank you, Chris. My website is AmericanMinute.com. That's AmericanMinute.com. And I send out a free daily history email. Another quote from Franklin Roosevelt, 1941, this is Labor Day. He says, "Preservation of our rights is vitally important now, not only to us who enjoy them, but to the whole future of Christian civilization." Sounds similar to Winston Churchill talking about defending Christian civilization.
Yes.
But here we have an effort to remember our Judeo-Christian faith on stone there in the Washington, D.C., right at the monument. It's been ignored for all of this time, and you, the listener, have an opportunity to add your contribution to this great project to have the monument be there as a testimony. It's just Franklin Roosevelt's prayer where he mentions God.
Yes.
And thank you so much, Chris.
Well, thank you, Bill, and we're looking forward to having you on the 25th for our annual Spring Freedom Banquet. And again, folks, you can register for the banquet. Frank Gaffney will be with us, Bill Fetter, other special guests, and you won't want to miss it. Well, Bill, thanks for being my guest today, and we'll see you on the 25th, my friend.
Thank you, Chris.
God bless you. And, of course, folks, you can also see the prayer on our website, the entire prayer, and we'll have the video up there later as well. And, again, that's at ohioca.org. Thanks for listening, and tell a friend about the broadcast. God bless you. Good night.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.